Sounds to me like you're daunted. Say it again like you're undaunted.
You are God honest, like a true Indiana basketball degenerate, if you are tuning in to this show on this week, the biggest week in Indiana football history. But hey, I appreciate it. I'm going to record the show as I usually do, so I'm just grateful you're tuning in. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, whenever you're listening to this. This is the Often Daunted Podcast, an ignorantly optimistic perspective on your Indiana basketball program. I am your host, Burke White. Joining you, thanks in part with the College Huddle Network, a network of college basketball and college football podcasts spanning coast to coast. On this episode, I'm just going to be starting out with short thoughts on each of the last three games we saw the Hoosiers play and win, that being Lindenwood, Kansas State, and Bethune-Cookman. After that, I'm going to follow the formula of the normal show. We're going to go Indiana news, conference news, national news. Heading into the flaunted and the daunted after that. For those of you new to the show, if you're just finding this, hey, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening or watching this. If you haven't subscribed to the YouTube, please feel free to take a second, pause this audio, go on your YouTube app, hit subscribe. Doesn't cost you nothing, just inflates my ego and keeps me going here. So if you're new to the show, the flaunted and the daunted is the week's winners and losers around the conference. Around the world of just, I mean, right now college sports, but not so much just basketball for this one. It's impossible not to be just swept up in everything that's going on in the football world. So of course I'm going to dabble in it a bit today. After the flaunted and the daunted, it'll be on to Burke's Big Five. That's my weekly list of just five things that I find in like just my random weekly, very subjective list over, it's basically a Mount Rushmore, but instead of four or five. So for this week, it's going to be the days in my Indiana sports fandom, the top five most important days of my Indiana sports fandom. After that, it'll be previewing our next week's matchups, that being Minnesota. Finally, some Big Ten ball has started. Big conference matchup. I mean, we need to destroy them, but big in that it's kicking off the conference season, and we want to do so right here at the start of the Darren DeVries era. After that, it'll be on to the Louisville preview, just a huge matchup on a huge day. If that doesn't give you a sign of what might be in Burke's Big Five this week, the days in sport of my Indiana fandom. After that, it'll be the Hoosier history hit, as it usually is every episode. And I just want to say, before we get started here with the recaps of the last three games, the Hoosiers went and won for us. I want to say thanks to any of the old listeners, anybody who has been with me along the way as I've been recording these. We are now in episode 122 of the audio. I think it's like episode 12 or something of the video. I can't appreciate you guys enough for continuing to follow the show, continuing to support. And I just can't thank you enough. For anybody new, hey, you did it. You found the last bastion of Indiana basketball content out there. You know, if you're new to the show, there are people who are far more talented analytically, far more, I mean, honestly, better communicatively, obviously. Communicatively. But this is just a labor of love that I do here. Just has become my favorite hobby to take on, and this is now the fourth season of doing it, and I can't appreciate you enough for just going out of your way and finding it, because I know it didn't just pop up in front of you, so I truly appreciate it. And without further ado, let's just get on with it. As was the case in the games prior to Lindenwood, it seemed like the Hoosiers really, really came sluggish out of the gate, making this honestly like one of the least impressive 20-point victories I've seen, with the Hoosiers taking this game 73-53. Definitely slower. Just several beats slower than we've seen them take the floor out of the gate. Following the Incarnate Word game, a lot of people, they were concerned with the stagnant nature of the offense at times, and rightfully so. I mean, rightfully so. As a fan, you should have been concerned with what we saw in that Incarnate Word game. But it was night and day compared to the ball and like just the movement that we saw from on the offensive end in the first two games of the season. They just seem to carry that sluggish pace, that sluggish nature, that lack of enthusiasm into this game last Thursday or two Thursdays ago. If yeah, you're listening to this when this comes out, just a sluggish showing, and the ball was not moving with the pace that we've been accustomed to in the first three games of the season. Tucker spoke to it in the post game, and enthusiasm was the word he used. He said, you know, we're not a very good team when we're not playing with energy and enthusiasm. And he hit it right on the head there. In this game, like, you're talking effort, you're talking enthusiasm. Rebounding is a lot of that plays into the results in rebounding. And rebounding was a major issue for the Hoosiers in this one. They had given up 17 offensive rebounds in a game against Lindenwood Lions. And it's like, that's just brutal. You know, we're going to face so much more size throughout the conference schedule, throughout the rest of the season, that this was a jarring game. And like I said, it was one of a 20 point victory. You know, you should be excited about it. You should be able to feel good about it, but It just didn't look like we had wanted, and it's so selfish and so crazy to be picky about how Indiana's winning 20 point victories this early into the Darren DeVries era. But man, the way they came out at the beginning of the season, they kind of set themselves up for this. It was just the lack of the movement on the offense made the threes taken in that first just not feel right. Like the games prior, all of the threes were smart shots that were a result of constant movement, of constant, I mean, effort to get open. And they really just stepped away from what we had come to expect. In this game, you saw Indiana miss plenty of free throws, going 18 for 27 on the night. And, yeah, if it wasn't for Tucker DeVries just finding a way to take over in the second half, absolutely lighting it up after a slow night against Incarnate Word in the game prior, Tucker was able to come back and find a way to find the bucket in this one. Absolutely. 5 for 10 on threes. We will take that all day from our head guy. If you have a problem with some of the angles, like I saw a bunch of people like, what is that shot? If you have a problem with some of the angles or ways he is going to get his deep ball up, it's time to get over it. We want him shooting the ball. Tucker DeVries is a bucket. Yeah, it's not always going to be the most balanced set shot, but he can make those leaning away from the basket. He can make those less than conventional formed three-point shots. He's already proven he can make those, and we will need him to make those. Another cold night of shooting for the Hoosiers as a team from three in this one. 9 for 28 for a 32% mark. You would hope that has to be the out of the norm. Like that has to be less than what we can come to expect from this team. Hopefully meaning that, you know, we're just banking on it, that, you know, we can afford to shoot that against Lindenwood if we can bring a little more favorable shooting out against the likes of Louisville this coming week. Sam Alexis in that Lindenwood game absolutely played his ass off despite the sluggish nature of the rest of the team at times. And this kid isn't massive, but his motor is massive. And that can make up for so much in the course of a 40-minute game. 8 points, 10 rebounds for him, able to get 4 blocks in that game. One of the grosser 20-point victories we've seen, but nonetheless a 20-point victory. My show, Walter, I'm going to keep these recaps for this game short because we got three this week. So my show, Walter Fish of the game for that one, It honestly had to go to Tucker DeVries. Just being able to contribute as much as he did. 25 points on the night, 7 for 15 from the floor. Not the most efficient night that we've seen him have. But, I mean, from 3, 5 for 10, what more could you ask for, honestly? 6 for 6 from the free throw line, getting it done where he could to give Indiana the respectable margin. For those just watching a box score, this didn't look nearly as bad. Which, I mean, those watching the box score, that is most anybody who's ranking us. So that is most anybody who's going to go on a national stage and say they have an opinion on us. So I'll take it all day. I'll take a 20-point victory, even if it didn't look how we wanted it to. I'll take it. And then we could move on to the Kansas State game. And that's honestly how I felt following that game. So, yeah, let's get on to the Kansas State game. Comes out against Kansas State, going wire to wire, never trailing to the likes of the Wildcats as they beat Kansas State at home 86-69. And this was a high-scoring Kansas State team. They held the 69 points. Indiana entering this game was 9.5 favorites, so we should have been, you know, we should have went into this game thinking that we could get the better of them, and boy, did we. Boy, did we. Kansas State was one of the best shooting teams in the country before heading into Assembly Hall. And it was, I mean, largely because they have PJ Haggerty on their team. And you see, again, talking about just the box score watchers, whoever is going to rank us, whoever is going to have a voice on the Indiana Hoosiers, they can say 16 points is very respectable from PJ Haggerty. Man, that was a hard 16 points to get. Connor Enright absolutely just had the Wildcats in a psychological torture chamber, especially in that first half, and I couldn't appreciate it more. In this game, the turnover battle was key. Indiana's turnovers were mostly self-inflicted compared to the ones forced that they had forced the Wildcats to make, and you saw that in the beginning, like especially in the first half. Just errant passes, travels, and just unfocused decision-making initially, that was what was killing Indiana. That's what they were shooting themselves in the foot in that regard in the first half. Made up for it in the second. But if they could clean that up, this game should have been an even larger margin than it was. And I fully expect they can clean it up. That was just a total lack of focus. And Darren DeVries, I think he's the type of guy who, like, I think we can come to expect him to address this kind of stuff in practice, to address this kind of stuff with his team. And, like, I mean, more so than coaches we've seen prior. I genuinely believe that. Stopping PJ Haggerty was easily the key to stopping Kansas State this season. And Indiana held him to 6 points in the first half. Yeah, 6 points, 3 for 7 from the floor. Hoosiers got to him just big time. Getting him to turn the ball over 6 times in that first half, really just telling him it was going to be hard. He was not going to have a good day. He was not going to have fun in Assembly Hall. And that is what I love. I love when our team can make teams have a bad time in Assembly Hall. Keying on such a star like PJ Haggerty, the way that the Hoosiers were able to shut him down, honestly, was remarkable. It can't be undersold. It can't be oversold just how important PJ Haggerty's production is to the Wildcats' success or failure. Like, he does everything for them. And Indiana was so good at making sure he wasn't going to be the one that beat us that night. Rebounding. Came out the tip with the effort and fire that Indiana definitely needed to negate our rebounding struggles. Looking at the battle, Indiana with the rebounding advantage, 35-28, definitely making up for the lack of size that we've heard a lot about. It was an effort-driven rebounding effort, so. Just appreciate the way that they came out in that game for it. Despite going about 5 minutes without a bucket, the Hoosiers took the 39-27 point lead into the half, and that was a rough 5 minutes. But despite the cold stretch of play, the hot stretchers really showed us. I mean, it really gave me confidence that Indiana can shift the scoreboard in just a moment's notice like that. Like, we can have 5 minutes without a bucket if the Hoosiers can just light it up on a moment's notice. It's something that the teams of old have lacked, an ability to shoot themselves back into it, to shoot themselves to a lead that the other team just can't deal with. It's something we've lacked entirely, and it's something I am so grateful Darren DeVries is like looking to make a staple, let's use that word, staple to his program. Even when Tucker DeVries is off, the Hoosiers can find a way to decimate a team of Kansas State's caliber. Like Tucker DeVries in that game, we saw him light it up from three the game prior. In this one, he ends his night with 9 points, an uncharacteristic 9 points, going 4 for 11 from the floor, an uncharacteristic night from deep, going 1 for 6. It's nice to know when option A isn't working, we have plenty of other guys who can produce at a level, at a rate that can keep us in games, can keep us in the lead in games like this. We don't have an option A, and if the option A isn't going to be working, we can go ahead and like we can rely on these guys. It used to be, if option A wasn't working, like think about the last 5 years of teams we've had. If option A wasn't working, largely being Trace Jackson Davis or Khalil Ware, or you know, the pick and roll with Ballo, Malik Renew too, I guess B. But if those options weren't working, we used to be able to just go ahead and that's just we're gonna lose this game. And even in games where it was working, oftentimes it resulted in, you know what, 3 points is worth more than two. And the other team seems to know that, and our team just can't wrap our minds around it. But this year's team, this new era of Indiana basketball, it seems like so many guys have so many different ways to contribute offensively that this team can survive rough nights from one or two of our offensive centerpieces. Speaking of just the effort on the defensive end, key guy in this game was easily, in my mind, Connor Enright. He's my favorite pest. Insane defense, guarding P.J. Haggerty like he did, just absolutely insane. Had whoever he was on, had them in a psychological torture chamber. P.J. started to find it a bit, but if you were able to shut him down for a half this game, that makes it pretty damn hard for Kansas State to compete with the way that they play. Basically, with everything going through him, this the defensive effort, the rotation, the constant tenacity that this team has shown on that end, I cannot speak highly enough about. I cannot be more proud to have a team that's doing that finally. Just doing the little things on the defensive end that make a difference. You know, effort don't cost them nothing. And they're more than willing to use it, especially guys like Connor Enright, that absolute dog, absolute pest. Love that dude. Taking Connor away continues to be maybe just the largest stabilizing factor on the team, and that was definitely on display in this Kansas State victory. Taking Connor away with 19 points on 7 for 14 from the floor. As well as adding 2 assists onto that total. Again, I say two assists kind of surprised me because I thought he would have more in that game. But it was a all-around just Indiana good ball movement night. Like the assist totals, 2 for Reed Bailey, 2 for Tayton Conaway, 1 for Lamar Wilkerson, 5 for Tucker DeVries. So even when Tucker's cold, he's finding his ways to contribute. 3 for Connor Enright. one for Trent Sisley, one for Sam Alexis. The ball movement is constant. They all trust each other, or else you wouldn't see assist numbers like that. It isn't a Batman and Robin show. You know, we got a plethora of options to go through on the offensive end. Trent Sisley in this game, he played really smart basketball. Really, really smart basketball. You know, smarter than you would think for a freshman. And he helped the Hoosiers big time just when Tucker was as cold as he was, just shooting the ball. Finding 8 points in this game through smart cuts and great ball movement in the first. I mean, 8 points in the first half, sorry. 8 points in the first half, 12 points on the night for on 5 for 8 from the floor, including sinking 1 of 3 from three. It's genuinely surprising how much he is contributing right out of the gate. I was hoping to get play like this from him like halfway through the Big Ten season. You know, something we might be able to rely on him for the turn, like should we get into the tournament, should we need to get into the tournament, but it, once we were there, like hopefully we could rely on him to come off the bench and be really really a factor for the overall outcome of the season. It's coming sooner than I thought. He's coming onto the scene way sooner than I thought, and it's awesome to see. We desperately need it for Indiana to reach the ceiling of its potential, and glad we're getting it this early. Reed Bailey was just forcing the ball way too much in the first half. This was such a crazy Reed Bailey game to watch, this Kansas State game. You saw him. It was just, I don't know if it was lazy or timid, whatever the passes were. He was telegraphing everything in the first half, telegraphing passes to the cutter he was just looking to make. And it just came, he came out in the second half. I don't know what coach told him, but whatever he did, he needs to tell him that at the beginning of the games. Came out in the second half looking so much more confident and just in control of this one. Like, ending his night with 21 points, 4 for 7 from the floor, getting to the line 15 times, sinking 13 of those shots. Those are some numbers right there. Just getting all the Wildcats in foul trouble on his way in doing it. It was nice to see how he was able to respond. Hopefully he can find a way to bring that confidence that he played physical in that second half, and that wasn't something that it was a level of physicality I didn't know he had in his bag, honestly. I thought he was just it wasn't the finesse that I had come to expect from him, and I'm so glad it wasn't. Like, the way he came out was much needed, and it was key for the Indiana Hoosiers' success here. Way to respond, Reed Bailey. Tucker was 0 for 4 through the first 12 minutes he saw in this first half. Despite lacking production at times, his competitive nature is enough to just fuel some winning basketball. It honestly is. He was working his ass off on both ends to get the ball where it needed to be or to help shut down the Kansas State offense. You saw him diving on the floor after loose balls, contributing to Kansas State's turnover issues. This team is fun to watch, and this Kansas State game was a great showing of just how fun this team can be to watch. Effort's fun, man. Effort's fun. Why? It's all we ask for. I love this team already because of the effort they are showing. When I see someone just flying across the floor after a loose ball, like this team is willing to do, it makes me fall in love. And I'm about head over heels right now, guys. I'm gonna be straight with you. Yeah. After this game, Indiana found themselves ranked 20th on KenPom, continuing to climb in the right direction. And what was more impressive about that KenPom ranking is the defensive rating. 15th after that game. Indiana, this team everyone thought was just going to be, you know, we hope we can outshoot them. No, this team is nasty on the defensive end. They aren't going to be the biggest. They aren't going to be the strongest, but they might be the nastiest in any given game. And you know what? That some nastiness can make up for a whole hell of a lot. Top 15, it's insane considering everything, every notion we had about this team at the outset of the season. And so, yeah, can't thank these Hoosiers for that performance in the Kansas State game enough. For the Showalter Fish of the Game in that one, I want to give it to Reed Bailey for his second half response, but I'm giving it to Connor Enright. If I have a chance to give it, Tayton Conaway with 19 points, 7 for 14 from the floor again, just being that stabilizing factor I was talking about. I'm giving it to Connor Enright. You know, it's a quiet 7 points, but he tacks on 3 assists. And it is just the manner in which, man, PJ Haggerty looked frustrated. I truly think Connor Enright's play was some of the most important in this game. I'm giving the Showalter Fish of the Game for this Kansas State win, 86-69. I'm giving it to Connor Enright. Well done. On to just some thoughts on the Bethune-Cookman game. Indiana beats Bethune-Cookman in Assembly Hall 100-56. And with that 100-point outing, Darren DeVries now has more 100-point performances than Mike Woodson did in his entire tenure. That is what I'm talking about. I mean, you don't want to just bury the past, but it's such a welcome sight to see this team hit that mark as much as they have, as much as teams prior should have. He's done it in seven games, has gotten to 300-point performances so far. And this is just the beginning, folks. This is year one. You got to be grateful for it. And in this game, IU knocking down shots in quick succession and just really flexing the shot-making ability, allowing them to get to a 20-point lead in the first 5 minutes of this one. And ending the first half with just an insurmountable lead, 51-23. And that just came on the back of high-efficiency looks off of assists and the defensive pressure rotating with pace and just a willingness to contest anything and everything. It's effort, it's movement, it's what we want to see, it's what we're getting to see now. Great to just see the Hoosiers finish strong playing the full 40 against a lesser opponent. How many times have we been able to say that in years prior? Great to see the Hoosiers finish strong playing the full 40 here against a lesser opponent, as they should, as they should. It isn't too much to expect. Well done. Tucker bounces back in this one from his slow night against Kansas State to lead the Hoosiers with 20 points, 5 assists. Just a great offensive outing for our leader. 20 points, 5 assists. That was on the back of 5 for 10 from 3-point range, 3 for 3 from the line. Finding ways to do it everywhere for us. Again, being a 5 assists in the game, incredible. 27 assists for the team in this one. Awesome. Awesome stuff. Lamar only went 1 from 8 from deep. But that's so crazy because Indiana was still able to shoot 38.7% from deep as a team. You would think in a night where Lamar's having those struggles, that percentage would be a little bit, if not substantially, lower than that. But the rest of the team picked up the slack. And once again, Lamar in that 1-for-8 outing from deep, just proving that he is so much more than the spot-up shooter that he was touted as. Entering the transfer portal, he scored 15 points. Excuse me. 18 points on the day, going 7 for 15 from the floor. finding ways to attack the rim, just making sure that scouting defenses, they know they have to guard him everywhere on the floor. He isn't going to be just lurking on the outside. He can do damage to you anywhere on that half of the floor. And if you're guarding him, get ready. Hope you did your cardio. It's going to be a long day on the defensive end. Again, in this game, Connor Enright, the man. Only 3 points, but it isn't the buckets he scores in particular, which, I mean, that 3 point was still very important, because those 3 points came off of the one shot he took on the day, the one shot he took from deep, the one shot that makes sure he has to keep whoever's guarding him honest. They have to guard him from out there, meaning he can open up the floor for everyone else, meaning he can cut into the interior and pass it out to the open shooters. It's so beneficial if he's able to sink. Like, if he's only taking one shot, the fact that he can make that one shot is so beneficial to the total all just production that this team is capable of. In this game, Connor Enright, yeah, 7 assists, team-high 7 assists, like I said, keeping the defense honest, making sure they have to guard him out there, because he's going to hit the one shot he takes. So watch it, because he's capable of making those. In this game, only one turnover for him. He's a beast. He's a menace, and he's ours. Thank God. We are going to need Reed Bailey to find far more of his second half performance against Kansas State, as opposed to this one against the likes of if we want to compete against the likes of Louisville on Saturday. And he was just playing a bit more, it honestly just seemed less confident in this game than he came out in the second half with against Kansas State. Ending his night with 5 points, 1 for 4 from the floor in his 18 minutes in this game. And, we didn't necessarily need him in this game, but we will need to call on him far more often than we don't, just based on the needs of our overall height for this team. And especially once we get rolling in Big Ten play. We desperately need him to find a way to bring that physical nature, that little bit of physical nature, more often than not. The bench was a huge boon in this one, reinforcing Indiana's dominance of this game. Big time production from Sicily, Sam Alexis, and Nick Dorn. Trent Sicily is just, like I said in the games prior, Trent Sicily is far smarter than your average freshman basketball player. He just is. He knows where to be in most scenarios on the offensive end, whether it's finding his spot on the perimeter or knowing when to make the backdoor cut. He's such a heady, smart player. He ends the day with 14 points in this one, continuing to look far more comfortable than the average freshman of his ranking. Sam Alexis also with 14 points in this game, a team high 9 rebounds, 6 for 10 from, team high 9 rebounds was Trent Sicily. Dang, my bad, Trent. Give the freshman his due. 9 rebounds for Trent Sicily, leading the team as a freshman on the glass. Awesome. Awesome to see. Sam Alexis following closely behind him with 8 rebounds of his own. The two bench guys coming in and grabbing boards, sinking buckets. Sam Alexis with 14 points, 6 for 9 from the floor, making both of the free throws he shot on the day. Indiana in total, 16 for 19 on the day. Awesome to see. Nick Dorn came out shooting great. We needed to see Nick Dorn get it going. Having him come off the bench as just another – we got threes for you at the top. We got threes for you on the back end. We got threes for days if Nick Dorn can come off the bench and go 4 for 5 from deep. He's just really really starting to show that he's finding his rhythm in this team's flow, and he is really just starting to flex some comfort out there on the floor. Awesome to see him find that in this game. Able to also tally an assist. Again, Indiana with 27 assists in this game. Awesome, awesome, awesome. That following, So following these games, we could expect both Jason Drake and Ristic, they should be coming back later this month, and then we just can see what kind of depth Indiana truly has, because these bench guys are already producing more than we have become accustomed to from our bench. But with those two guys coming back, this depth may really be something. Like, we have options. We have options on options, and it's awesome to see. Following this team's performance, Indiana moved up to the number 19 spot in KenPom, the next highest Big Ten team. Just the next team right above them in the Big Ten would be Illinois at 17, my bad. And the next lowest, the team right below them, was Iowa at number 21. Following these three games, Indiana sits at second behind Purdue among all college basketball for assist-to-turnover ratio, 15th in the country in offensive efficiency, 11th at opponent's points per game, second only to Michigan State in the conference, 6th in the country for defensive efficiency, good for 6th overall, just ahead of Michigan at 7th. And all in all, this is everything you wanted to see from a tune-up game prior to taking on the first Big Ten opponent of the season. This team, it's going to be a fun year. You know, we couldn't have possibly had that high of expectations for this team heading into the first season of the DeVries era. But boy, they are doing a lot to, you know, warrant expectations of their own. So awesome to see. Indiana goes 3-0 since our last time of recording, and here's hoping we can continue on. Stay undefeated, boys. There you go. Let's get into the Indiana news. Starting off the top of the Indiana news, the Week 5 college basketball rankings have dropped, and Indiana currently sits at 22 in the AP poll and number 19 in the coaches poll, continuing to move in the right direction. And, you know, leaving room for some growth. We can't start at number one. We got to fight our way there. Awesome to see just how quickly it's turned around here in the DeVries era. Other Indiana news last week, you know, this guy, Mitch Sherman from The Athletic and Locked On Nebraska. He had a whole lot to say about our fan base, and I didn't take too kindly to it. I didn't like it. He tweeted out a image of, you know, two fans booing a Nebraska volleyball player in Wilkinson Hall. Well, boo-hoo. Like, Indiana fans booing a Nebraska volleyball player, you know, the number one team, you know, they kind of built for that moment. And he just said, not sure if Indiana encourages these people act this way in every match, but when they're allowed to stand inches away from the players, that's an embarrassment. Anyway, unbeaten Nebraska goes home after they, just talking about how they won. I just want to say, don't come at my people like that. Have an ounce of perspective, dude. Like, call me old-fashioned, but I want the opposition to have a terrible time when they're in my venues. I hope they have the worst times when they're in Bloomington. If you're not a Hoosier, I hope you have a bad time. I hope you leave in tears. No offense to your athletic teams. I mean, I'm sure they're great people, but they aren't my people. I hope they have bad times in Wilkinson Hall. I hope they have bad times in Assembly Hall. I hope the Nebraska Cornhuskers, I mean, they have bad times in Memorial Stadium now. So I just want nothing but bad times for the opponents in Bloomington venues. And this picture outing these students like this, like, dude, get over yourself, get some perspective, and move on. Come on. Despite the SEC's best efforts, Indiana remained number 2 on the latest college football playoff rankings. And I'm just sick of the SEC cherry picking. Sick of SEC fans thinking we can all just beat each other. So we must all just be the best. You know, we can all beat each other, so we must all just be the best football team there is. And instead of questioning, you know, maybe we all just beat each other because none of us is truly dominant. None of us stands out above the rest, and we're just all mid as hell. And just no one in this conference has consistency. I just don't know how they can't question that. Our best team lost to Florida State. That's that conference. Their best team lost to Florida State. Their highest ranked team hasn't played anyone. Oh, wait, they did. They played one team above the top half of their conference, and that team lost. It's insane. I hate how they can just, and ESPN's just working right in tandem with them. It's nasty bedfellows in that regard. Yeah. They just cherry pick the narratives they want, and it's sad. Oh, recruits visited Saturday during the Wisconsin game. Four-star Jack Kinnon, 6'6", 215-pound small forward, out of Slinger, Wisconsin. And five-star Josh Lindsay, 6-foot guard out of Louisville, Kentucky, were both visiting during the Wisconsin game. And I just have to say, it's so awesome that our football team might be able to lend a hand in basketball, like recruiting now. It's just such a better environment to sell recruits on now that Memorial Stadium is just buzzing louder than it ever has before. Also, on an official visit on November 19th was four-star 6'8 wing in the class of 2027, Trevor Manhertz, coming from Cary, North Carolina. Right now ranked as the number 63 overall recruit by 24/7 Sports and the number 9 by the National Composite, number 90, sorry. Lenardi's latest bracketology has the Hoosiers as an 8 seed. This came out on the 24th, so I'm suspecting it should be higher following the Kansas State performance. Here's hoping. And as for Torvik currently has us sitting at 20, right behind Kansas and Kentucky at 19 and 18. Hoosiers standing strong in the net rankings, as you know, the dreaded net. The bane of our existence for the past few years. Kind of doing us some favors here. Indiana currently sitting at 11th in the net rankings, right behind Michigan State at 10 and Louisville at 9. Some awesome news that just dropped this day of my recording on Monday. ESPN PR tweeted out, "Are you serious? Legendary hoops icons Dickie V and Charles Barkley will team up for two can't miss hashtag NCAA MBB games this season. December 13th, 7:30 p.m. Indiana men's basketball, Kentucky men's basketball on ESPN. That is the first game listed on there, and just awesome to see Dickie V gets to call that game again. You know, here's hoping we got some of the same magic. It's going to take, I mean, it was on Assembly Hall's floor before. It's not as hype of an opponent as they came on to the season as, but nonetheless, getting that win in Rupp Arena at the restart, the, you know, jump start of this rivalry again. Man, I desperately want it. And it's just awesome to see that Dickie V is going to be on the call. You know, some people are over Dickie V. I'm not one of those people. And lastly, Indiana news, biggest day. Probably the biggest day in Indiana hoops or sports history, I mean, is on Saturday. The Hoosiers are going to the Big Ten Championship with a chance to take home their first Big Ten outright title in football since 1945. Me and my crew will be in the South lot, and I'll be seated in section 420 if anybody else is around. It's just going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. Indiana opened as 5.5 underdogs in the game against Ohio State. And with that game against Louisville, who is a team that is a national title contender in, like, in that conversation, who's got it better than us? Everyone in Indianapolis, every Hoosier in Indianapolis, who's got it better than us that day? Come on. Let's get on to the conference news. Starting off the conference news with a story from about, you know, a week and a half ago. Four players were ejected in the final seconds of Arkansas's one-point victory over Winthrop last Tuesday. And it was a result of Logan Duncombe. Logan Duncombe put Nick Pringle in a headlock, gathering the ball out of the net, and basically suplexed him to the ground. Duncombe fell over teammates' feet and ripped Pringle to the ground. Pringle then picked up all 230 pounds of Logan by the front of his shirt in a very hostile manner, with the altercation earning both of them offsetting technicals. Arkansas's DJ Wagner and Isaiah Seely, along with Winthrop's Edwin Namoko and Pharrell Boyogueno. Yeah, that's tough. Boyogueno were all ejected for having left the bench during that altercation. Mike Rhodes with a fantastic quote as last week after I had him on the daunted list just for merely coaching Penn State and being like, man, this guy's a good, I think he's a good coach. It's just such a shame Penn State will never invest a dime in that basketball program. The following week he had a pretty nice gem of a quote saying, following Penn State's 84-80 win over Harvard on the 19th, Mike was asked about his team's struggles from the free throw line in that game after they had shot 17 for 25. And he had said, I want to fire the free throw coach, but I'm the free throw coach. And it's like, I don't know why I wanted to share that. I just thought it was a funny quote because, man, he seems like he's just, it's just such a hapless situation he finds himself in. He wanted to coach at a big time, like a big conference program, and it just stinks. It's Penn State. It just stinks. Michigan jumped four spots in both the AP. They are now sitting at number three, and the coaches poll now sitting at number two following their show of dominance, winning the players' era. Six Big Ten teams are currently ranked in the AP. Purdue at number one, Michigan number three, Michigan State number seven, Illinois number 14, Indiana number 22, and USC at number 24. With the next three receiving votes all being Big Ten schools, those three being Iowa, UCLA, and then Nebraska. The latest Cats 23 has been announced, with number one going to a split decision between Purdue and Arizona. Number three, Michigan. You have Michigan State at six. Indiana at 14 from Mr. Andy Katz. Illinois at 19. USC at 21. Nebraska at 25. Iowa at 27. Ohio State at 33 following that loss to Pitt. For your Big Ten Weekly Awards, we have 2 weeks of them to record on this one. Last Monday, the Big Ten announced its weekly award winners. Maryland's David Coit earned his first Player of the Week honor after scoring an Xfinity Center men's basketball record 41 points, tied for third all-time at Maryland. That kind of blew me away because I'm like, most of the Maryland teams that I remember from the past decade, maybe, they've all kind of been a one-guy show. The fact that this David Coit guy came out and won it this year, pretty impressive stuff. Setting 41 points in that game. In the Terps' 95-90 win, overtime win over Mount St. Mary's, that's a tough look. The graduate student recorded 16 of Maryland's final 19 points in the last 6 minutes and 27 seconds of the second half, including the game-tying three-pointer to force overtime and save Maryland's reputation with that one. Last week's Big Ten Freshman of the Week was Braden Frazier. After he averaged 18 points and 7 rebounds off the bench for the Nebraska Cornhuskers while earning the Hall of Fame Classic MVP in that championship game against New Mexico. Oh, I guess it wasn't the championship game. In the game against New Mexico, he had 20 points on 6-for-8 from 3 while grabbing 8 rebounds in Nebraska's 84-72 win over New Mexico. After that, he followed it up, giving Kansas State their first loss just prior to their trip to Assembly Hall, 86-85, as he had 16 points and 6 boards in that one. The player of the week for this week, as announced on December 1st, was Yaxel Lendenborg. Yaxel Lendenborg was named the MVP at the Players Era Festival after leading Michigan to 3 wins by more than 30 points, including wins over number 21 Auburn and number 12 Gonzaga. He averaged 17.3 points, 7.3 rebounds, 3.7 assists, 2 steals, and shot 63% from the floor, including 43.8% from 3. He led the Wolverines in scoring in each of their outings. And, yeah, the freshman of the week for this week, 12-1 again, was Caden Mingo. Caden Mingo posted 13.5 points, 3.5 rebounds, 4.5 assists, and 5 steals in leading the Nittany Lions to a pair of wins on the week. And, yeah, he tied the program single-game record with 8 steals to go with 13 points and 5 assists in a win over Sacred Heart. I look at those numbers, and I'm like, what did Trent Sisley average this week? Why isn't he the freshman of the week? He had an outstanding week. I fully expect Trent to get some of these this year. For some of the results since the last time of our recording, I'm starting with the last Thursday. Yeah, this is even before Thanksgiving, so buckle up. Last Thursday, it took triple overtime and a prayer heaved from Jordan Marsh after a steal from Rodney Rice for USC to beat their Sun Belt opponent, Troy, 107-106. Wisconsin got absolutely waxed by BYU in Salt Lake last Friday night. That was the Friday night before Thanksgiving. 98-70, Wisconsin shooting 7-for-29 from deep while BYU buried 14 of 34. Richie Saunders leading the Cougars from deep 5-for-9 from the night behind the arc. Oscar Clough had 15 points and 15 rebounds for the Boilermakers as they beat Texas Tech 86-56 in the final game of the Baja Mar Championship that same night. The Big Ten had its first losing night of basketball during the non-conference on 2 Saturdays ago. Not this last Saturday, but the Saturday prior, as Penn State lost to Providence and Minnesota lost to San Francisco, with the only victory for the day coming from Illinois, beating Long Island 98-58. Ex-Terp Jacoby Gillespie torches Rutgers on Monday in the Players' Era, as last Monday in the Players' Era, as he scored 32 points. And Nate Ament had added 20 to those efforts to help number 20 Tennessee defeat Rutgers 85-60. Jackson Shellstad went 1-for-11 from deep as Oregon lost to number 23 Auburn on that Monday night of the Players Era event, 84-73. Michigan beat the hell out of San Diego State in the Players Era on that Monday, 94-54. The Wolverines held the Aztecs to 27% shooting from the floor with an impressive defensive performance. They followed that up with the thrashing of number 21 Auburn 102-72 on Wednesday. 6 Wolverines were in double digits in that one. Tuesday, Maryland got pantsed. That last Tuesday, Maryland got pantsed on national television, losing to Gonzaga 100-61, going 5-for-21 from deep compared to Gonzaga's 14-for-33. Miles Rice with one more turnover committed than point made, 2-1. The Terps followed that up with a 105-72 point loss to Alabama on Wednesday to end the Players Era Festival with a negative 71 point differential through their first 2 games of it. The California Golden Bears, who lost to Kansas State earlier, beat UCLA 80-72 on Wednesday. UCLA's catalyst Donovan Dent went 1-for-8 for the night in that one. Mick Cronin crediting their loss to UCLA's glass jaw. Michigan destroyed Gonzaga on Wednesday 101-61 as part of the Players Era Festival. Hayes, Yaxel Lendenborg with a 20-point double-double as the Wolverines dominated Gonzaga in every facet of that game. Michigan State beat UNC on Thanksgiving 74-58 with Jeremy Fears leading the Spartan effort with 19 points. And, that was in the Fort Myers tip-off. Creighton beat Oregon on Christmas Day 76-66. Oregon shooting 1-for-15 for 7% from three in that game. This last Friday, the Big Ten went 1-for-5 on the day. Tryptophan beat the conference last Friday. Purdue with the lone win over Eastern Illinois 109-62. UConn beat Illinois 74-61. Colorado beat Washington 81-68. Just on the side, everyone was pretty high on that Washington team heading into the season, and I just have not seen it yet. 74, TCU, a team that almost, they came out so bad to start the season. TCU beat Wisconsin 74-63. Pitt beat Ohio State on that last minute second buzzer beater 67-66. And Santa Clara beat Minnesota 86-75. Illinois lost. Yep. I said that. As of Sunday, seven Big Ten teams remain undefeated, that being Nebraska, IU, Iowa, Michigan, Michigan State, Purdue, USC, and the next team actually listed with the best overall record is Penn State. Good for them, 7-1. Haven't played anyone really, but hey, still good for them. That is all I got for you on the conference side, the national side. Let's get on to the flaunted and the daunted for the week. Starting off the flaunted is Tom Izzo. Michigan State's looking good, and he's going to be able to talk a lot of smack about the current state of college basketball if his team can continue to find success. He's going to go on a PR tear if the Spartans are a team worth the damn through the rest of the season, and it very much looks like they will be. Also flaunted this week, Michigan basketball won the Players Era and didn't just win it. I mean, you had to win it by a lot to win it. They won it by a lot to win it. Looking really good in that event. Got to give them credit where it's due. Michigan basketball was flaunted this week. Also flaunted this week, Connor Enright. Being able to shut down PJ Haggerty for a whole half. Connor Enright just absolutely, like, you could see how frustrated anybody he was guarding was in that Kansas State game. Absolutely crucial to our success there. And it's the little things he does that yield results that get the rest of our own team hyped about it. Like, he's so integral to the success of this team. Absolutely flaunted for the way he was able to contend on the defensive end throughout the week. Trent Sisley, flaunted. Showing off his ability to contribute off the bench reliably, at a level that we shouldn't be able to expect a freshman to do so. Trent Sisley, absolutely flaunted this week. Last on the flaunted list is Darren DeVries. Darren DeVries, showing Hoosier fans a team that will just take smart shots and play hella hard. Like, he's the straw that stirs this drink. Like, he is getting this. I have a feeling he is getting the most out of this team because he's able to be a coach on the floor. He's able to speak to these guys in a way that maybe not even coach can. So I just cannot give him enough credit for this start that Indiana has had. An extra flaunted. The Hoosiers winning the bucket again. Good on you. Let's keep it. Let's keep it a few more decades at this rate. On to the daunted. Starting off the daunted list with USC football. You know, another football blue blood has no choice but to just sit and watch us have a season they wish they could. After losing to Oregon, USC's college football chances were dashed last week. And, yeah, have fun watching us. We got a lot of season left. Also on the daunted list is Oregon basketball. Just underwhelming at each turn this season. I think they might have been on the last one. But Oregon basketball, they just have been underwhelming at every opportunity this season. Gonzaga around Christmas seems to be their last chance at a victory worth a damn outside of conference play. And even that game now, soured. Michigan made that game. I mean, yeah, it'll be a great win. Yeah, it'll still be a great win. But, I mean, Michigan made that Gonzaga team look fraudulent. And that seems to be their only chance at a solid win here in the non-conference now. And, yeah, Dane Altman seems to have lost this team before the season's already even gotten rolling. He left the Players Era Festival with three double-digit losses last week, currently sitting at number 86 on KenPom. I can't even imagine. Yeah, I'm gonna do that segment where we see where we started, where we're at once in about a month or 2 weeks' time. So I'm going to be interested to see how far they continue to fall in those rankings, those ratings. Also daunted this week, Nebraska. Get waxed by Penn State, then you get waxed by Iowa. Then Mike Sherman makes your whole fan base look soft as baby shit with his take on Wilkinson Hall's environment. Not a great week for the Huskers, whose football team has spent three decades trying to do what Coach Sig has done in a year. But hey, you're a volleyball school now, so don't sweat it, I guess. Michigan football, Tyrone ain't it. Tyrone ain't it. Michigan football, daunting. Yep. Record 15th straight appearance, Purdue football. You lost the bucket again. We are just dancing in the glow of success right now. And you just, much like so many of our blue blood haters, you just got to sit there and watch. So that's your flaunted and the daunted for the week. Let's move on to Burke's Big Five. Starting off Burke's Big Five. This is Burke's Big Five. Five most important days of my Indiana sports fandom. Starting off number five, psych, 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 psych. This is it. There's only one day we have to discuss this Saturday. There is only one thing we can possibly be focusing on. Sure, there are more games to come. I mean, there are more games to come this season, but like, I want this one so bad. We need to end a 30-game losing streak to the likes of Ohio State. This losing streak dates back to 1989. This game is all that truly matters this week. We can go through the history of everything. I don't care. This is the day in Indiana sports history. Number one, number one, number one. This Big Ten championship, Indiana football, go and get it. Let's go on to a preview of Minnesota. Indiana takes on Minnesota at 7 p.m. on Wednesday. Minnesota currently ranked 114th on KenPom with the 119th offensive rating and the number 125th defensive rating, playing with the 355th adjusted tempo. So it's going to be a slow one. Currently playing with that 355th adjusted tempo out of 365 schools. Currently, points per game, Indiana has the edge there, 89.6 to 73.5 by Minnesota. Minnesota also, while playing less possessions per game, allowing more points, 68 as opposed to Indiana 62. Shooting currently, I mean, they are currently one of the teams that is rebounding less than us. 37 rebounds per game compared to Indiana's 39. Assists per game, 16.5. They are currently sitting on a three-game losing streak with their last five games being a win over Green Bay, in which they took Green Bay to overtime 72-65, a win over Chicago State 66-54, a loss to San Francisco 77-65, a loss to Stanford 72-68, and a loss to Santa Clara, 86-75. This is, I mean, as far as in-conference must-wins go, this is an in-conference must-win, even if it is in Minnesota. Like, the ball is going to bounce the way it bounces, whatever the case may be. We need to win this game. Right now, this is their first premier season with their new head coach, and it is going slightly, I mean, far worse than our first season with our new head coach. This is Nico Medved's premier season as at the helm of the Golden Gophers, and this is the first. It's just started with a crawling pace. He's proven to be a great coach from the program that he built at Colorado State before getting the Minnesota job. He's one of Minnesota's own, so it made sense for him to get the job. Now that I mean, I say that right now, but then I'm like, maybe alumni aren't the best to be coaching your team. Maybe there's too much there. But getting this job this season after starting his journey through basketball as a Minnesota Gopher manager when he was a student. He then went on to coach at Furman, Drake, Colorado State, and now Minnesota. Offensively, the entire game plan, it's going to be running through Cade Tyson. After a less than stellar high major season premiere with UNC last year, he was given the keys to this season in Minnesota, and he is the centerpiece in all their production. At 6'7", I don't expect Connor to be on him, but I do expect the defense to still give him fits compared to some of these teams that Minnesota has tipped off with lately. Like I said, they just lost to Santa Clara, Stanford, and San Francisco. We need to be far more tenacious than those teams probably were. Cade Tyson currently averaging 22.4 points per game, 1.8 assists. So he kind of, yeah, like I say, it all runs through him. It isn't like it runs through him like it runs through some of our guys. Like, he's the one taking the shots. He's creating his own shots. He's the one to look out for. Their strongest player probably has to be Jalen Crocker Johnson this season. While I think he can get boards, he's currently averaging 9.1 boards per game. While I think he can get boards, I like the height matchup in favor of Reed Bailey. And being a similar height to Sam Alexis in this game, I expect the Hoosiers to be able to handle their own on the glass against one of the smaller front courts that we'll see in Big Ten play. I really like the Hoosiers' chances to go into Minnesota and start the Big Ten conference season off right. So here's hoping they can do just that. Other people to look out for, I guess. Got a guard, Asuma. He currently leads the team in assists. And if it isn't Cade Tyson making the shot, it's going to be Asuma passing to him to take the shot. So if Indiana can clog those lanes between them, could go a long way in creating fast break opportunities for our guys on the other end. Let's get on to the Louisville game. Indiana needs to win this game. End of story. Let's get on to the Louisville game. Indiana is the home team as they take on Louisville, the away team, at Gainbridge Fieldhouse this Saturday in Indianapolis, 2 o'clock p.m., contributing to what is the biggest day in Indiana sports history, this Big Ten championship game. Like, you can start the day off with an IU basketball game. I'm previewing this game. I'm excited for this game. I'm going to be tuned into this game. That being said, I love Indiana basketball. This is the podcast. This is my hobby. I love Indiana basketball, but this game will be second fiddle for anybody who gives a damn about this football team. This is the biggest football game ever. That being said, we need our basketball team to not reflect that at all. This needs to be the biggest game for them. I need them to be focused on this Louisville team. Like, having a good showing in what will be like the country, one of the first good looks that the rest of the country gets at our team. 2 o'clock on CBS. It's the main channel. We're going to have a lot of eyes on this one. Louisville currently according to ESPN's matchup predictor, has a 68.3% chance of taking this one over the Hoosiers, who are sitting at 31.7. They are currently ranked number 8 on KenPom with the number 2 overall offense and the number 29 overall defense, playing at the 59th tempo. They currently sit at number 9 in the net rankings. Number 9 versus 11, that's a good net matchup. Their last 5 games, all wins, including that win they had against Kentucky 96-88, and the game wasn't even that close. Then a win over Ohio 106-81, followed by a win over Cincinnati 74-64, a win over Eastern Michigan 87-46, and a win over the New Jersey Institute of Technology 104-47. Points per game, they're lighting it up, 96.7, while just also having a defense just as strong, 63 points there compared to Indiana 62.4. Indiana does have the field goal percentage right now, advantage 50-48. That being said, it's just a razor thin margin. These two teams they like to move fast. Indiana, this is going to be a fast paced game, could potentially be a shootout. From that darling Indiana State team with Kareem Abdul Jabbar. Yeah, I almost said Kareem there. Kareem Abdul Jabbar, Robbie Avila. Ryan Conwell has been showing out for the Cardinals this season, currently averaging 20.1 points per game. He is the Cardinals' leading scorer. That is Ryan Conwell from Indianapolis, Indiana. Played his high school ball at Pike. Currently averaging 20.1 points per game, while also grabbing 5.4 boards, 2.4 assists, shooting 46.5 from the floor. The other guard to watch is absolutely going to be their standout, their superstar freshman, Mikel Brown Jr., wearing number 0 on their team, 6'5", 190 pounds from Orlando, Florida, currently averaging 17 points per game, 6 assists. While Conwell is the shooter, he's the one taking a lot of the shots. Mikel Brown is the one creating most of the shots for their offense. He came into the season ranked as the 6th overall freshman, and he's lived up to the billing every inch of it. And just insane handles, excellent vision, excellent shot making ability. He can do it all from the point guard position, and he's the exact type of point guard Pat Kelsey wants, looking to constantly push tempo whenever and wherever he can. He is a problem for most teams. In my opinion, most teams don't have a Connor Enright. Wow. Like PJ Haggerty is a problem for a lot of guys. With the way he can score and get to the bucket and create for himself, I am going to Mikel Brown has an advantage with the size, but I think that'll just make it that much funnier when Connor's just being that much of a nuisance to this freshman. I genuinely think that our defense can find a way to get to him, to cause some issues, to get him flustered, to get him out of his game a bit. And Indiana will have to do so in order to get the best of him in this one. The front court, now they do have this. This will be the biggest challenge we've had from a front court this season, easily. Two big men that may absolutely present a challenge for us are 6'11", 250-pound Sananda Frew from Berlin, Germany, currently averaging 9.9 points, 5.9 rebounds, shooting 74.3% from the floor, and Connie Ruths, a 6'10", 215-pound sophomore, averaging 7.7 points per game and 5.3 rebounds. They can their size is going to present a new issue that we really haven't had to address as of late, that we really haven't had a good barometer on how we truly will stack up against these teams with greater size than us. And it's going to be interesting to see how Indiana can compete against the likes of, you know, taller, more physical front courts than our season may have started with. We will definitely need a lot more of the second half Reed Bailey than the first half Reed Bailey in that Kansas State game. I think he can bring it. This Louisville team, they can get a 15-point lead in a flash. But despite that, it's been a while since I felt as comfortable going down as I do with this team. Like, as fast as they can shoot us into a deficit, we can shoot ourselves out of one, and vice versa. This is going to be an absolute shootout, and I'm just hoping that the Hoosiers can bring their A game into Gainbridge. So, yeah, who do I think is going to win? I'm always going to say the Hoosiers. This show is an ignorantly optimistic perspective. I truly believe that the Indiana Hoosiers can get the best of the Louisville Cardinals in Gainbridge on Saturday. Just you know, already getting us hyped up before we head into Lucas Oil and take on Ohio State for the Big Ten championship. Let's get on to your Hoosier history hit, and then we'll get you on out of here. For your Hoosier history hit, I wanted to bring up the year 1945. 1945 was the last year in which Indiana was outright Big Ten champs in football. Yes, the Indiana football Hoosiers won the Big Ten outright in 1945. That team was coached by Bo McMillan. They had a 9-0-1 record, going 5-0-1 in the Big Ten. Their key player was George Taliaferro, who was a consensus All-American. Their final ranking on the season, despite winning the Big Ten, was number 4 in the final AP poll. So I'm sure it was a year that Michigan. Michigan might have still claimed the national title, even though they didn't win the conference. Who knows? So just looking at the year 1945. 1945 home prices. Yes, I just wanted to give some context for what the world was like the last time Indiana was at this height of their football supremacy. 1945 home prices. The average cost of a home was approximately $3,500 to $4,000 through the mid-40s, with specific examples like $3,450 in 1944. Inflation adjusted, that would be about $68,000 in 2025 dollars. Needless to say, totally different world. Groceries and food, eggs will cost you 58 cents for one dozen. Milk was 63 cents for 1 gallon. Fresh ground hamburger for 1 pound would be 60 cents. Bacon, 1 pound of bacon, 43 cents. Admission into your movie with your prettiest gal in 1945 would be about a quarter. Candy bars, about a nickel. But absolutely the largest factor in 1945, I mean, no surprise to anyone, had to be World War II coming to an end. Never forget that Finland was part of the Axis powers until March 3rd, okay? Never forget that Finland was part of the Axis powers until March 3rd of 1945, basically waiting until everybody was at the finish line to switch up and join the winners. The Winter War, Finland, you know, I just want to bring that up because they really got away with a lot because they were on the bad side for pretty much all of it up until the last second. But after the Soviet Union invaded, Finland mounted a surprisingly effective defense against a much larger Red Army, despite ultimately having to cede territory to end the war. The continuation war happened from 1941 to 1944. Finland joined Germany's attack on the Soviet Union, with its primary goal being the reclamation of lost land in the Winter War. Though not an official Axis power, Finland was a co-belligerent with Germany and received German military support. So they weren't an Axis power, but Germany's military fully supported them up until 1944. So just know, I see that was a side history hit. Just remember, Finland not great at the beginning of the 40s. Just remember that. March 3rd, 1945. Finland declares war on the Axis powers. This is kind of like the wrap up of the war. April 12, Vice President Harry S. Truman becomes the 33rd president of the United States upon the death of President Franklin D. Roosevelt at the Little White House in Warm Springs, Georgia, after a intercerebral hemorrhage. President Truman was sworn in that evening at the White House. April 18th, American war correspondent Ernie Pyle is killed by Japanese machine gun fire on the island of Ieshima off of Okinawa. So for those of you that, Ernie Pyle, that's the journalism school. He was killed in 1945, just before the end of the war. April 30th, 1945, death of Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun, his wife of one day, committed suicide committed off themselves as the Red Army approached the Führer bunker in Berlin. August 6th, this is when we had to wrap up the other part of the war. World War II, the atomic bombing of Hiroshima on August 6th. Little boy was dropped on the city of Hiroshima at 8:15 a.m., resulting in between 90,000 and 146,000 deaths. August 9th, the atomic bombing of Nagasaki. The bomb Fat Man was dropped on the city of Nagasaki at 11:02 local time, resulting in between 39,000 and 80,000 deaths. August 14th, World War II, Emperor Hirohito accepts the terms of the Potsdam Declaration. Potsdam Declaration. And the U.S. President Harry S. Truman announces the Japanese surrender that day, August 14th, 1945. The largest invention of the year? Yeah, that was just the recap of the last year of the war, because that was what every current event had to have been focused on throughout Indiana's football dominance that year. I'm sorry. Even if you are the world's biggest Indiana football fan at that time, there's some shit going on. And largest invention of the year, just something on the side. Patent for the microwave oven was filed in October of 1945. Sports in that year, giving you some perspective on the outcomes of the major sports. There were the NFL championship. The Cleveland Rams won 15-14 over the Washington Redskins at Cleveland Stadium. The Army Cadets were named the college football national champions. So there you go. It wasn't Michigan calling, even though they didn't win the Big Ten, calling themselves a national champ. It was the Army Cadets. In the World Series, the Detroit Tigers beat the Chicago Cubs 4-3 in the NBL championship. Now, the NBA would be founded the following year in 1946, but in the NBL championship, shout out to all my fellow residents, the Fort Wayne Zollner Pistons won over the Sheboygan Redskins. The Masters tournament was not played due to World War II. The U.S. Open was not played due to World War II. And the British Open was not played due to World War II. The Stanley Cup, the Toronto Maple Leafs. Yes, I said that. The Toronto Maple Leafs beat the Detroit Red Wings 4-3. And yeah, that was your Hoosier history hit, just providing you some perspective on what was going on in 1945, the year in which Indiana was the outright Big Ten football champions last. Let's go get it Friday, or let's go get it Saturday. Thank you so much for tuning into the Often Daunted podcast. I cannot appreciate you enough for giving me the time, giving the show the time, giving it a chance. If you like the show, please feel free to subscribe on the whatever audio platform you're listening to this. Or, if you want to see the ugly mug behind the mid takes, go ahead, hit up the YouTube, subscribe there. Doesn't cost you nothing. I will be back following Indiana's games against Minnesota and Louisville, and Indiana's game against the Ohio State Buckeyes for the Big Ten Championship in football. Again, I'll be at the game. Shout out anyone at the South lot. If you see me, let's party. Let's get ready to support our Hoosiers. Let's get ready to cheer our asses off. I can't thank you guys enough for listening. If you want to give me a follow across any socials, I am at Often Daunted across all socials. Go ahead and hit me up a follow there. I can't appreciate you guys for following me there, providing whatever you think, whatever insight you think could contribute to this show, make it better. I fully listen to all of it, and I just can't thank those who do. Give me some tips, give me some advice. I appreciate it. So feel free to reach out to me across all socials at Often Daunted. And let's go get the Buckeyes. God bless you and yours, Hoosier fans. Lux up, Veritas. Bye.